The Dono Show, Andy Kamenetsky, Lauren Shelburne, in for George. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils made from natural gas. They give you an unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests appear on the Shell Pennzoil performance line. We'll be having Albert Breer on in about 5 or so minutes from Monday Morning Quarterback Sports Illustrated. We were talking, though, Ramona, about Mark Davis and this proclamation that if fans are not going to be in the stadium when the new Las Vegas Raiders open their season, then out of solidarity, Mark Davis is not going to be there as well. That is his idea of being there for the fans. He doesn't want to choose between any of them when it comes to PSLs and the price of the tickets that they bought. But also, he feels this kinship with those fans. Question for you, though, Momo. How do you think the players would feel about the idea of them being out on the field, playing the game, especially in the age of COVID, but their owner not actually being in the building?
I mean, I personally think that that's leadership on Mark Davis's part to speak out and say, I wouldn't subject fans or anybody else to this if I won't do it myself. And so therefore the players are like, well, why are you making us do it? I mean, this
That's
isn't safe.
Point.
Why are
that
we doing
is my
it,
point.
Right? I know. I agree with you. Look, if all players need is a framework of things like the NBA has done. The NBA did 113-page manual of here's how we're going to keep you safe. Here's how... You know, this is the best solution for all of us to stay safe. We're going to test all the time. We're going to have you, we're going to give you these rings that if you want to wear the ring, maybe that'll help you. Like the NFL really took care of this. The NBA really took care of this, right? They spent months coming up with a health and safety plan, collectively bargaining it with their players back and forth. They had to thread the needle, you know, on what feels like too much surveillance, what feels like too much invasion of privacy, what feels like, you know, but also just enough to maybe to hopefully keep everybody safe while they're in that bubble. I haven't heard a peep out of the NFL. All I know is they got these helmets. It just seems like they got these helmets that have the face.
The ones that JJ Watt hates.
Yeah.
That we
players
should know he hates them.
Not into them. They need to acclimate. I mean, gosh, we had a whole reality TV show last year on Hard Knocks about Antonio Brown and his helmet. You know, and those were like, that's just a regular helmet. This is like a helmet with like this Iron Man face shield so that nobody breathes or spits on each other. I mean, do we know that that's going to work? You know, this Oakley helmet, is that going to just save everyone? Do we have testing on that? Do we have, show me the testing results. Show me the data. You know, let's create the new Jerry Maguire line. It's not, show me the data.
Show me the data. Show me the data.
I remember one of the early things we saw in COVID, there was this, have you seen that meme that goes around the internet where they modeled, they give one person, they put some dye on their hands, some invisible dye, and they go to a buffet. And within like 10 minutes of going
God,
to the buffet and
this.
Sitting at the
I
table,
so
where
don't
does
see
the
dot,
where does the invisible dye get?
Oh my
it's,
God.
It's literally everywhere. Like it's oh. all over the buffet.
I mean,
it's all over everybody
like
else
see,
at their table.
Is it yeah. like when you see cops go through a crime scene with the black
yeah.
light?
That's right.
Oh
with
my,
the black light.
Oh God, I don't want to see that.
There's some blood and there's some blood and there's some
oh.
bodily fluids. Like there's, you know, it's like, woo. I mean, this is what it's like. There's your model. I mean, you know, then they were doing modeling of when you're walking in the supermarket and somebody's walking around with COVID and doesn't have a mask on, how far can those droplets spread? And, you know, we all thought it was like 6 feet, but the truth is like if you're in an indoor air conditioned building, it can jump over like several aisles. Like, so somebody 3 aisles away from you, if they're not wearing a mask, could like spread COVID to you. And like, once we do that kind of modeling, like it's very sophisticated type model, like then we all know what we're dealing with. But I don't think the NFL has, I mean, if they have done it, nobody's seen it.
On a related note, buffets are done, right? Like we're never bringing the buffet back. Like, I don't feel like we're going to be seeing a buffet. I mean, maybe when there's a vaccine that has been readily available and we
yeah.
know is effective. But until then, like my wife and my daughter and I, we've gone a few times to Playa del Carmen in Mexico.
Yeah.
To this all-inclusive that we've stayed at a few times. It's fantastic. There's a lot to do down there. The food's really good. And my daughter keeps talking about how she can't wait for COVID to finally be done because she wants to go back down to Mexico. And she also, in particular, wants to get back into these different restaurants with their great buffets at the resort they're in. And I've tried to explain to her, I'm like, those buffets aren't going to be there. Like, maybe we can go back to that hotel, but the buffets are done. We're not going to be seeing a buffet for a long time.
Yeah, it's going to be a while. I mean, what happens to Sizzler?
Ooh.
What about Hometown Buffet? It's literally
the name
of the restaurant.
Soup Plantation went under.
Yeah, it went under.
Soup Plantation went completely under. I mean, all of those different type of places, they're going to have to reconfigure their business model and figure out some way to give you that type of variety and price, is you know, which is what used to bring in everybody to Sizzler. My freshman year at USC, there was a Sizzler across the street from us, and you know, that was super popular with the students because, you know, the all-you-can-eat factor with that buffet, and it was better than a lot of what we got in the dorms, but you can't do that anymore. Like, the idea of being in a buffet shoulder-to-shoulder with people with that much touching, and like you said, the droplets, oh my God.
I mean, I think, Andy, I really think our whole world is going to be different when this is, you know, hopefully, we all keep talking about when this is over, like, I assume one day it'll be over, like something will happen, like we get a vaccine or we get some therapeutics or, you know, whatever, like maybe not, maybe that's going to be years from now. I hope not. But we keep talking about it, but don't you feel like we're fundamentally different now? Like when somebody has a cold, even like you're not going to go to work with a cold, or if you go to work with a cold and you're not wearing a mask, people are going to be mad at you.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you're going to start getting shunned for that. Like, there's going to be a certain amount of shunning that goes on for people that don't feel like they are when it feels like people are not proactively looking out for other people with their own health issues. Because we've already seen, I mean, this is obviously an extreme example.
Yeah.
But we've already seen what happens, you know, when too many people are not concerned about it. I mean, look at the way we flatten the curve in this country. And then everybody got lax. You know, things opened up, I think, too early in too many different places without enough restrictions. And now we're re-spiking again. And for the people that take this stuff seriously, and we're seeing, if nothing else, NFL players take it seriously. I think we're going to be, I hope we're going to start becoming more hyper aware of just, you know, not even just with sickness, but just in general, like, how do we affect other people's lives?
Yeah.
Like the responsibilities that we have as people towards other people. Like, you know, we talk a lot about freedom in this country, and in particular personal freedom, but personal freedom without personal responsibility is basically just a palatable form of anarchy, in all honesty. Like, if you're not thinking at all about how your personal freedoms require personal responsibilities, then it's just a free-for-all, and that's not a good thing.
I mean, I think we all had this idea that, you know, getting a cold is like a just something that happens to you, and you don't get mad, and you know, like when you sit next to that person on the plane who's like coughing or sneezing, you could tell they're obviously sick. You know how people used to like try to conceal it? Like, I know I do. I've been sick, and like I try to pretend like I'm not. Like, oh, no, it's okay. I'm okay. And I kind of try to keep it to myself and everything. But like, you take some cold medicine, you're like, oh, I just have allergies. But the truth is, you're totally sick. You definitely should not be out in public. You definitely could spread it to people, especially when you're contagious. But none of us like to put our lives on hold while we have that. Or like admit to that. Like, what if I just said, hey, I can't come to the radio station because I have a cold?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one person that I know is considerate towards the health and well-being of others. Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter, Monday morning quarterback at Sports Illustrated, guest appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line on the Sedano Show, brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Albert, how are you?
I'm good. And I'm definitely guilty of everything that you guys just said, concealing coughs, acting like I'm not sick, thinking that the right thing to do is to push through. I honestly can't remember the last time I took a sick day. So yeah. I'm 100% guilty of whatever you guys were just talking about.
Well, I imagine, though, your habits are going to change just like everybody else. And in the meantime, we're seeing a lot of NFL players expressing outward concern that the league has not put in enough thought and organization towards the health protocols with restarting the league. What, from your perception, what is it that you think the players feel most in the dark about?
I think the frequency of testing is an issue for them, because I think they understand that the game of football itself, and you can separate in the building, you can separate at meetings, you can send everybody home at the end of the day during camp instead of having them in a hotel. You can take every precaution, but you know, in the end, they're still going to be running into each other, and they're still going to be in close contact enough to spread this. And so, you know, I think the league and the teams have actually done a lot as far as trying to set up the facilities in a safe way and try to safeguard everybody as best they can. But I think there's an acknowledgement by everybody involved that, you know, there is inherent risk just because of the nature of the sport. And, you know, I think one of the things that's very clearly an issue for the players right now is, you know, how much they're being tested. They want daily testing. The league hasn't acquiesced to that at this point. That could be coming. But, you know, that's also been complicated over the last few weeks by the spikes in Florida and Texas and California, and now the need for more tests for the public. And so that's become more complicated. And then I think the other piece to it is, you know, how you're going to handle the preseason. And, you know, this plays as much the football injury thing as the coronavirus, where, you know, the Joint Committee for Health and Safety has advocated for a 6-week ramp up before you play a single game, whether it's a regular season game or a preseason game. And right now we're at the point in the calendar where if you're going to start the regular season on time and you're going to follow that advice, follow that 6-week ramp up, it's going to be pretty much impossible to play any sort of preseason.
Albert, what's going on with this helmet? Is this like the catch-all thing? Is this like their secret? I mean, from the designs I've seen, it's kind of like the football version of an Iron Man helmet.
And yeah.
Is that going to stop everything?
I mean, I know players are skeptical because of their ability to breathe, you know, and it'll be interesting to see how that does in testing. I know the owners had wanted that to be mandatory, because the last thing the owners want either is for this stuff to spread. You know, I mean, and we all know how contagious it is and how fast it can move through workplaces and all that. So, you know, I think that on paper it looks good. The idea, and they've worked with Oakley for months on this, you know, so on paper the idea of protecting players this way really does look good. The question is how functional it is. And I know players, based on their own experience, how exhausting playing an NFL game is, are skeptical of how functional this is actually going to be. Protective, yes, but whether or not you can actually play with it and not put yourself at other sorts of risks, that remains to be seen.
So the issue is breathing. Is how about seeing with it?
What you said, seeing?
Yeah. How's the visuals on it?
The visual, I think, would be okay because they've already sort of worked on some of, like, a lot of these guys wear visors to begin with.
Okay.
And so the technology with the visors has improved where you see a lot of players now wearing them. And, you know, this is sort of an offshoot of that. Like, you know, in a certain way, it's almost like putting a visor over the bottom half of your helmet, where traditionally it would be just over the top half, covering your eyes. And so I don't think seeing would be as much of a problem. I think breathing would be the issue. And again, you know, the league and Oakley have said that they've been cognizant of that as they've worked through this. But functionally, we don't know. And functionally, I think it's going to take players actually, you know, taking it out to the field and trying it out to see, you know, just how well it works in practice.
Talking with Albert Breer, senior NFL writer, Monday Morning Quarterback at Sports Illustrated. We've started to see, Albert, some details about rules for NFL players on the road, you know, the idea that they have to order in food, for example, to the hotels that they would be in, certain amount of restrictions. Do we know it all, or have you heard anything about potential restrictions for how these guys are supposed to how they're supposed to act when they're at home? Because that in and of itself, I think, offers a lot of risks.
Yeah, and I know some players are concerned because they've got family members who have underlying health conditions, you know, and so, All right, you're going to send me home, but am I taking something home with me from the workplace? That's a problem, too, you know, so, you know, they've worked on that with some players, the idea that maybe players could have the option of staying in a hotel for the season if they wanted to. So a lot of these things have been broached and talked about. Like, look, the bottom line, and I think there are two things that are really kind of, you know, in play here. Number one, and the NFL and the players both agree that they're at mercy to they're the mercy of whatever happens in the country. And so, you know, the better we all do over the next 6 months, the better shot the NFL is going to have of starting a football season and finishing a football season. If there are, you know, if hot spots are, you know, pop up around NFL cities again, then obviously that's going to affect the chance that you have of finishing the season. You know, and then there's that other, the other part of it, which you mentioned, which is part of this is going to be the responsibility of the players. And I know some coaches are hoping that there will be a sort of peer pressure going on. Because one thing for a coach to stand in a meeting room, and Ramon, I know you know this covering the NBA, and I'm sure it exists with some of the NBA teams now. It's one thing for a coach to stand in front of the room and tell a player what to do. It's another thing if it's his teammate saying, you better not do this, you know? And so I think that that element, you know, there's, you can't tell a guy, you know, you can't monitor these guys 24/7 if you're not creating a bubble. And so they're going to give guys guidelines for how to handle themselves when they go home, where to stay away from. And then it's up to the individual guys, you know, how strictly they're going to adhere to those things. And you're talking about guys, I mean, the NFL is the youngest of the pro sports leagues because so many of the guys are at the bottom of the roster, 23, 24, 25 years old. And so, you know, you're going to have a lot of really young guys, you know, at that age where you don't, you know, you have that sort of feeling of invincibility. And so there's no doubt about it. You know, the idea of what happens after these guys go home at night, there are some very, very, you know, serious challenges for each of the teams to handle. And for the individual players, I think it's going to sort of come down to your own personal responsibility and then the people around you, again, not just the coaches, but the players, too, holding you to all of that.
Albert, what about fans? I mean, it just, you know, I know that's the big issue in baseball and the NBA, how much revenue comes from just the gate of how, you know, fans coming in, merchandise sold, et cetera. Like, how does that affect the NFL's bottom line if they have fans at all or have just limited amounts of fans in each market?
Yeah, it's going to have an impact. I'd say the NFL is more reliant on its national television revenue than other sports are. And so, you know, that's a major reason why just getting the games on TV would be a huge win for the NFL. So, you know, I think that, you know, it probably won't hit the NFL quite the same as other sports, but the numbers are bigger in the NFL too. So, you know, the gross number may wind up being larger. The estimates I've heard are about $100 million per team. If they were to play the entire season, start to finish, no fans in the stands at all. And that comes out, you know, if you do the math, to $3.2 billion across the NFL.
Oof.
I've heard some estimates that are higher than that. I've heard some estimates that are lower than that. But the NFL is, you know, its total revenue on an annual basis right now is around $14 or $15 billion. So it's a chunk. It's not an insignificant chunk. And, you know, like that's sort of where the teams are starting to look at certain ways to mitigate those losses. And, you know, one I think you'll see immediately is tarping stands. I know one team that I talked to had said that they felt like comfortably that if they were allowed to green screen some ads on the field, and then put ads over the stands, they could maybe make about $30 million of the lost revenue up over the course of a season. So they're going to be creative in trying to find ways to recover the revenue. And then ultimately, guys, this is going to be a years long thing too, because they're going to be trying to make up for what they lose in 2020, you know, to try to, you know, at least manage the salary cap going forward. And that could mean 17 games happening faster than it would have otherwise. It could mean an accelerated timetable on monetizing gambling. And I think it'll certainly lead to some urgency on negotiating the next set of television deals.
Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter, Monday Morning Quarterback at Sports Illustrated, giving the straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Appreciate the time, Albert. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All this stuff that Albert's talking about in terms of fan revenue and safety issues, it raises a larger question, I think, Ramona, just about like what are we doing right now with sports? And a bit of a rising sentiment I'm actually seeing among some fans that maybe we shouldn't be doing this at all. Talk about that. Coming up next, the Dono Show, 710 ESPN.
You give the
a bad name. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. With more than 30 unique coverage options available, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Andy Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne in for George Sedano. Sedano Show, 710 ESPN. Bon Jovi's really missing out if all these stadiums close. Like, they're an anthem rock band. Like, you'll hear some Bon Jovi at an NFL game.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to an NFL game in a while. I went to Raider games all the time, but then, like, I haven't been to any Rams games since they started. And, you know, we've just been so basketball focused, right? Like, it's just kind of during our season. And then when I have an off day, it's just, I don't want to go spend time with a million people anymore. But I guess that's not going to be the problem for a while.
Yeah, this is hurtful. I think, you know, the pandemic and no fans, like, this is hurtful for Bon Jovi. Really bad for Imagine Dragons. Like, Imagine Dragons, they exist for sports venues and Mason. Right. For Steve Mason.
Yeah.
Like, he's the only adult Imagine Dragon fan that I know. And it's a bunch of sports fans. And, they're going to take a hit.
That's Jock Peterson's walk-up music, right?
Imagine Dragons?
Feel the Thunder.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, he walks up to that one?
I think, for a while there. Wasn't that the Jock Peterson one?
Ramona, last season feels like it might as well have taken place in 1975.
I know. I told like, you, quarantine on, months or years. Yeah. In dog years, it's, you know, we have to talk about quarantine
absolutely,
months.
It's absolutely insane. But what was interesting, though, over the weekend, Brian and I, during the Saturday morning happy hour that we host from 9 to
11. Are you guys just on, like, every day, all day? Like, I feel like you're on
pretty
at
much,
night, you're on in the morning.
Pretty much. We have used the pandemic to like do a full reversal of what had been happening. Like before, you would go, you know, pockets of time where you'd hear a lot from us, then pockets of time where you don't hear at all from us. We're just on constantly now. Like you can't get rid of us. Like tonight, the late night happy hour is going to be on. You can find it on the station's Twitter, also the Periscope. We're going to have a LeJethro Jenkins, good podcast host, also great on social media. Knows a lot of NBA, really funny. We're going to have him on. We had Flea on like a week or so ago. He was fantastic.
Cool.
So,
what's Flea doing? I see him on social media. He's like out going for hikes all the time.
Flea is living his best life. I think that you can in the pandemic. He's actually been using the time rather admirably to volunteer at different places and try to help people that, you know, frankly, don't have the resources that he has to try to get through what we're living in right now. And he actually said, like, this period has been great for him from a creative standpoint. Like, he's got, again, when you've had the type of success that he's had, and he readily acknowledged this, you have the luxury of being able to shut down from the world and just write or just be creative. Also, too, his daughter is grown, so he doesn't have to raise her right now. Because, I mean, I'm sure you've noticed this, like, people, when the quarantine began, you had all these people talking about, oh, I'm going to binge watch this or I'm going to write my great novel or whatever. It's like, okay, you don't have kids. You clearly do not have a child or children if you're talking like this.
Like, honestly, I feel like the world is separate. Like, everybody is, like, now grouped amongst whatever your relationship statuses are. Like, single people are experiencing the pandemic in very different ways than married with no kids people. Than married with kids people, than married with grown kids people. Like, people married with grown kids, that's really fun for them, right?
Yeah.
like they're doing good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But married with kids people, all we do is like, we're teachers, we're babysitters, we're just full-time childcare plus full-time work plus full-time. I mean, that's one category. And then single people, I have a sympathy for that as well, because I was, you know, I can understand how different that would be. Like a lot of my single friends, they're like, they're kind of getting lonely, you know, like you can't, you know, when you're fun, when you're single, you go out and have fun with your friends all the time. You go on dates, you go do whatever. And like a lot of that is very fraught now. Like a lot of your social life is just, you have to consider. I had a whole long talk with one of my best friends the other night who's single. And, you know, I was like, so what do you do out there? She's like, well, you know, it's like you have this, before you even like date anybody, you have to say, you know, I tested negative last week. I really only associate with, you know, four people and they're all being safe and quarantined and blah. It's like, you literally have to like interview people about their like habits. And I also think people are going to lie though. You know, like you have decide if that person's lying. Do you know them well enough to decide if this is somebody you trust? I mean, you know, okay, people slip in things like, oh yeah, I mean, I went to this barbecue last week. It was so cool. And you're like, how many people were there? Were they wearing masks? Did they share utensils? You know, you have to do those kind of questions now.
Ramona, let's be honest. How often when you start a relationship, period, are you starting it on a bit of foundation of lies? Like you never let the other person into exactly who you are. Like you never do that. Although, I mean, like, I mean, I can't speak for everyone. I know I'm a mess. Like, I'm gonna ease people. You know, my then girlfriend, when I met her, now wife, I eased her into some stuff. Like, I didn't give her the full picture right away. I mean, that swing a stick around for that. No.
Yeah, you know, you can't hit them with everything right off the bat. No.
I found out she. Here's the thing. She did some of that too.
Oh yeah, of course.
There's a lot you learn. Of course. I mean, okay, you and Nevin have been together since when, like college?
Forever. Yeah, like, pretty much. I was like 22.
Okay. So 22, you guys are going on almost 20 years together.
Yeah.
You're still learning stuff, right?
Oh yeah. Well, look, when I first started dating Nevin, he was 6'1". And then every couple of years, like he'd lose an inch. And like to me, I didn't know the difference, because like to me, I'm like really short. So he was just taller than me. So if he told me he was 6'1", I was like, okay. And then he's like, oh, I'm really more like 6 feet. I'm like, oh, okay. Then it was 5'11". Then it was 5'10". And then I'm like, seriously, tell me the truth. Are you really 5'10"? He's like, I mean, I'm actually really 5'9". I'm like, okay. Well, you know, like that sounds legitimate to me now. But like, this has to be it. We can't keep losing an inch after every couple of years. You already got me. We're already married. Tell me the truth.
So like, what's the truth?
I think the truth is he's really 5'9". I really think he is.
He's really 5'9"?
Yeah, wait, I think that's the truth.
Oh, wait, hold on. Wait, stop. Yeah. Stop. He went from 6'1 to 5'9"?
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a bit.
Momo, I'm sorry. You're on the shorter side, but you're not 4'3". Like, how do you
I
not,
know.
You spent your entire life around athletes. How do you not know the difference between 5'9 and 6'1"?
It just, everyone's so much taller than me. I just don't have a good eye for it. Like, my dad's 6 feet. Like, Nevin seems to be about the same height as that. I mean, I don't know. He spikes his hair up. Like, you know, just, you know, he doesn't seem that short to me, but, you know.
Is this Fletch, you know, 6'9 with the afro?
But probably like, everybody who's told me that they're, my guess is everyone who's told me that they're 6 feet is probably lying. They're probably all 5'9", and that's why I don't realize the difference between 5'9 and 6 feet.
Well, here's a place where honesty reigns. Nature. Nature. Whether you're out on the trail, out on the terrace, the deck, or the dock, nature. With Nature Valley Crunchy Granola Bars helping you make the most of your outdoor time. Because a crunchy bar tastes like summer wherever you are. Like an honest taste of summer. Not one that needs to be propped up 5 or 6 inches with spiky hair, Ramona. Like honest, true. That's relationships begin with Nature Valley granola bars. All right, coming up, Dwight Howard said some interesting things over the weekend with regards to the mask that he wasn't wearing and was reported for wearing, and what we should be focusing on as media while the bubble is taking place. And frankly, I got some issues with the way he presented it. Talk about that coming up next. The Dono Show, 710 ESPN. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Andy Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne in for George Sedano. Sedano Show, 710 ESPN. And there's been a lot of talk, Ramona, about the snitch line the snitch line that can be utilized down in the bubble. Players, NBA players, policing each other. And one of those players policed was Dwight Howard, who was seen out in the bubble not wearing a mask, got reported. Frank Vogel was asked about this a few days ago, his reaction when getting reported. And Vogel's reaction was basically, we're told to wear masks. He should wear a mask. He's going to wear a mask moving forward, which I thought was both straightforward and correct. But Dwight was asked about this over the weekend, and he said that he thought it was pointless for somebody to tell me that I didn't have a mask on by myself. I don't know what would have happened. I just think everybody's making a big deal out of it, but he feels that they're safe enough down in the bubble. They're tested every day, that the risk is so minimal that he doesn't feel like they should have to at that point, just that it's pointless for somebody to report him for that. But then he was asked later about how his family, you know, how it is holding up without his family. And he said that it's difficult, but they got to stay, quote, got to stay focused, can't complain. We got to stay locked in with what the mission is besides the mission of basketball. We still want to keep up the awareness of what's going on outside the bubble. There's things that have been happening that we still need to discuss. Breonna Taylor, the people who did the heinous incident against her, they're still free. They're out there living their best life. Instead of worrying about if I have a mask on or not, that's something we should be discussing. Dwight is correct that we should not be losing focus on Breonna Taylor, on George Floyd, on, you know, the decades of systemic racism in this country, decades of police brutality, issues that have gone unchecked way too long. And I feel like we are at a reckoning right now in our country's history with this, and hopefully it's a reckoning that leads somewhere. But the truth is, that has nothing to do with whether or not you're wearing a mask out there. And to try to use Breonna Taylor as, you know, frankly, a shield in terms of your own lacking responsibility, it's a bad look by Dwight. And I say this not to pick on Dwight, but I say this because Dwight's been very outspoken about wanting to use this time to raise, you know, to raise awareness of these issues. He's donating his game checks to his own, to his foundation. And that's all terrific. But when you do something like that, it undercuts your credibility as a messenger. And also, too, it's just, it's deflecting your own personal responsibility down in the bubble. And I just thought it was a bad look for Dwight.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of conflating of arguments right now in all sorts of things. It's, you know, you have, like, you know, what Dwight's saying about Breonna Taylor is absolutely true. Okay.
Yes.
You know, the police who killed her are still at large. You know, there's nothing's happened to them. We haven't, you know, no one's been arrested for her murder. I think that's terrible. And that comes up on social media all the time. There's always, you know, hey, let's get her name trending again, just to remind people that this is still a grave injustice.
And I'm glad that happens.
Me
glad
too.
Glad that happens.
But I think the thing with the mask is not related in any way, shape, or form. The thing with the mask is, hey, there's a reason why they're asking you to do this. Is it a little overkill? Probably. You know, I know what a lot of NBA players feel right now, which is, you know, why is it okay for us to, you know, play basketball where we're breathing and sweating and spitting on each other and, you know, whatever they do, okay? And then the rest of the time we have a mask. Like, we can't play doubles ping pong or sit close to each other. It's a good question, but I would tell you that I think the right answer is you're limiting your exposure. So yes,
exactly.
Every time you're playing basketball, you're exposed potentially. But the rest of the time, you should limit your exposures as much as possible, because it those things don't go together. Like, if you know, if I go and I say, all right, you know, yesterday I had a party at my house. It was me, my husband, my son. We all live here. My parents, who have been isolating with us, we pretty much only see my parents, and that's our social, you know, thing. We have expanded it now to my brother and sister-in-law and their infant. Okay, he's 8 months old. We invite them over for pool parties, but even though they're isolating themselves and they are doing, you know, we trust that they are being safe, I also, because they haven't been tested and I don't feel like, you know, I know everywhere they go and I, even, you know, I think they're being safe. I know they don't see other people, but you know, you just don't know. Are they going to doctors? Are they going to stores, et cetera? Yeah. We said, when you guys come over, let's wear a mask in the house and I'll wear one too. And that the idea is we're not going to just say it's all okay just because you've been isolating. We're going to limit the exposure. We're going to make this calculated risk every time to just continue to lessen the risk. It's the same reason why they have housekeepers only clean one floor at Disney World. Clean one floor. You know why? If that particular housekeeper happens to have COVID, at least it would be contained to the only the floor and the rooms that she worked on. At least those exposures are contained.
Yeah.
You don't want to have one housekeeper go to 17 different rooms on four different floors, and now all of those people have potential exposures. You want to just limit it one floor. That's the whole point.
Right. But also, too, like, if you're going to bother doing this whole thing with the bubble and go through this entire rigmarole, there's no point to doing this if you're not going to follow the rules. Even if you think some of the rules are stupid, or if you think that they, you know, that they butt up against the stuff that you're doing while actually playing basketball, it's just about trying to increase the odds in your favor. You know, just trying to play them as smartly and efficiently as you possibly can. Because, you know, you might be playing against somebody in a game, you know, rubbing up against them, getting sweat on each other at a point where that opponent isn't infected. Then maybe a couple hours later, somebody happens to be in a scenario where they leave themselves, you know, open to exposure. And, you know, the worst case scenario, they actually get infected. And then you see that person a couple hours later. If you let up at all, then you leave yourself that much more open for exposure of your own. And then everything starts to slowly go through that butterfly effect. So, I mean, I'm sure that I get why Dwight thinks some of this is stupid. But if you're going to bother doing it in the first place, particularly somebody like Dwight, who, you know, really, and I'm not saying this to be critical of him, but he went back and forth on, you know, he kind of hemmed and hawed about whether or not he wanted to do this for reasons that I think are perfectly legitimate, understandable. I have no issue with him vacillating on it. But if you're going to go down there, like, protect yourself as much as possible, protect everybody else as much as possible, because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I get this idea of like why it seems ridiculous. Like one thing is okay, but then the next thing is wear a mask and let's overkill it, right? It just, it's about if let's say one day some player that you played against comes down with COVID, then everybody he's played against has been exposed and they need to be quarantined and tested until we're, you know, sufficient to say that they don't have it. But if that player also has not been wearing a mask, then everybody else that he comes in contact with in the bubble is now exposed. So we're talking about 15 players being exposed. Okay, let's say 30 because you can't, his own team. So 30 players being exposed while they played versus countless numbers of players, you know, 200 players who may have come and interacted with him as he went about life in the bubble. That's a really big difference.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a really big difference. And
I
think
all of these little interactions matter. They all potentially at least add up.
Yeah, they add up. And I think that's what we all have to like try to understand in our own lives. It's not, if you know, I see my neighbors all the time. And you know that nowadays we all snoop on our neighbors, right? Because that's all you have to do all day.
Well, you know, you yourself,
just, and I live on a cul-de-sac, so it's like, I mean, I just know everybody's business.
Are you going like,
you know,
full? Are you going like full rear window with like the binoculars?
Yeah.
Are you like
almost?
How much,
yeah.
How much are you spying on people, Momo?
Well, okay, like so, a couple of my neighbors have daughters who are like in their late teenage, early 20s years. So like I watch, you know, do they have friends over? How they have friends over? Like how are they going out? You know, like you can kind of see that kind of stuff. There's a lot of my neighbors that seem to do a lot of home improvement right now. Like everybody's having all these crews over to do their driveway or to do, you know, whatever projects they're doing. And I, you know, I'm just like, what are you doing? Like what, you have all these workers over at your house all the time? Like, you know, and like this one neighbor, this is funny. This one neighbor, they're like so vigilant about we wear our masks and my husband's immunocompromised. last week they had this like crew of painters over, and they were like inside the house like all the time painting their house. And I'm like, what are you doing? People shouldn't be in your house. Like, extra people, even if they're wearing masks, it's just, those are all exposures. And so I think like you have to, exposures add up. Safe exposures, not safe exposures, like it's all a cumulative risk factor. And I think players are starting, players, some players get it, most don't. Most just think it's like stupid that you're allowed to play and then you have to wear a mask for everything else. But that's why the NBA spent 3 months studying this. And I think that their plans thus far, I'll knock on wood as I talk about it, thus far it's working pretty good. The only thing that's weird is like the lack of information about it. And, you know, every day we start hearing a new player here or there who none of us did. We didn't even know they weren't in camp. And, oh, wait, Pat Connaughton said he has COVID and he's going to report soon. Russell Westbrook is supposedly reporting soon. Oh, we didn't even know those ones, right? So that's the part that's kind of tricky to sort through as this beginning goes.
Yeah, so everything in sports is just going to be different, including their immersion and their involvement with social justice issues. And there's something interesting going on that I think may test the limits of how much sports can get involved with that. Talk about that next. Also, Ramona's status as her self-appointed cul-de-sac cop. Sedano Show, 710 ESPN.
Woohoo!
Happy belated birthday to our own Ramona Shelburne. Andy Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne in for George. And you turned, I don't want to say unless you're going to say it.
No, I turned 41.
Okay.
And it was interesting because like Laura had a birthday last week too. How old were you? 32, Laura?
Yeah, 32.
That's a good age. I would go back to 32. That's good. That, I like
32
that
is good. That's early good. 30s is pretty good. Because like, yeah. Some like people always say like, you know, I'd love to be, you know, young and 20 something again, 20.
No,
like,
I want to live. You don't know a thing. 30s. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't know a thing at that age. Like you, there's so much that you're getting wrong and you don't even know it. But like in your early 30s, you're just old enough to start getting some things wired, but just young enough that you can get away with living a younger lifestyle. Like early 30s is pretty good.
Yeah. That's a peak time in your life. Like, when I look back on my 30s, like everything was really good from like 30 to like 37 or so. Like that's still like a really good age. And then like, it's not like it gets bad after 37. It's just like your body starts to like not be that young anymore. Like you can't, I used to be able to just stay up all night, push myself. I'd wake up, I'd go on 3 hours of sleep and do it all again the next day. Like I was just like, I could just do anything physically I needed to. And now it's like, I didn't get a good night's sleep, and it messes me up for 3 days.
Well, in part, Ramona, you don't probably fuel up the correct way with Nature Valley granola bars. Whether you're out on the trail, the terrace, your deck, the dock, Nature Valley granola bars, they help you make the most of your outdoor time, or I imagine your recovery time, because a crunchy bar tastes like summer wherever you are. Or it could taste like 32. It could taste like you're 32 years old. Take you back to when we were young and indestructible like Laura, Ramona.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I do now at 41? I try to get my steps in.
Yes, yes.
You're like focused on, you're like, how many steps did I do today? You're like, when I was 32, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go to my hot yoga class for 90 minutes. Like, I'm going to go run a few miles. Now I'm like, you know, can I scene set for you guys right now? Let me tell you what
please,
I'm doing.
Please do.
I'm walking around. I'm in my bedroom. And I used to sit during the show, but then I realized like this could be some very productive getting my steps in time. So pretty much the entire show, I just walk back and forth in my bedroom as I'm talking to you.
Really?
Yeah. Let's see what my step count is up to.
Well, you know what though, Ramona, I'm going to give you some props on this
and
a shout out because you were among the first guests on the late night happy hour, the show that Brian and I do Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 p.m. On the show's Twitter feed. You can also see it on our Periscope. You did the entire show on an elliptical. You did an hour and change on this elliptical the entire thing. You didn't get off. Like you made the most of that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm already up to like 1,000 steps. 1,000 steps during the show. 0.3 miles so far. I haven't gone the whole time. Usually I do like the entire, usually I'll do like the whole show. This time I was sitting for a couple segments, but like I could get in like 1,000, 2,000 steps over a course of a 2-hour show. I just keep going. Just keep doing it. That, yeah.
I feel so useless during this show.
Like, what are you doing? Sitting at a desk?
I have recorded absolutely no steps during this show.
Yeah.
Zero. I feel like an absolute slack ass. Like I've accomplished nothing. I've gotten less healthy over the course of these 2 hours, Ramona. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah. Well, keep at it. I mean, you know, just why don't you just start? Like you and I, we got 15 minutes in the show left. Let's just keep walking back and forth. Let's just keep, let's do it.
I'm really impressive.
You can't tell I'm not out of breath. I mean, you can't tell. It's good.
No, I had no idea. Look, Momo, I saw you do our show on the elliptical, and you did not end up out
of
breath.
I'll take a little video of me, but you have to promise not to post it anywhere because I'm definitely like have my glasses on, and I'm so not dressed for anything. Okay, but I'll just take a little video so you can see me talking live on air, walking around my bedroom, and then I'll send it to you. So if you don't believe me.
No, I do believe you, but you know, as the saying goes, pictures or it didn't happen. We're seeing a lot of sports and different leagues wading into more than ever the issues of social injustice. You know, in the wake of George Floyd's killing and Breonna Taylor, and just the decades of systemic racial inequities, police brutality, all these different issues that have really come to a head over the last few months. And, you know, the NBA and the WNBA have been out in front in ways that I think most people would expect from those particular leagues. But then we've seen a sport like NASCAR, you know, weigh in when it came to their support of Bubba Wallace and not allowing the Confederate flag to be flown during races.
Yeah.
And the NFL even spoke out, you know, as strongly as they could in support of their players when it came to this issue, you know, acknowledging that they had wronged Colin Kaepernick without coming out and saying we had wronged Colin Kaepernick. Baseball is now having conversations about how they as a league are going to be wading into the issues of social injustice and incorporating them into the games, which I think is going to be really fascinating to watch, Ramona, just because baseball is, I mean, I think whether you're talking about culturally or politically, it's a small or big C conservative sport. And it's going to be, I think, especially depending on the region that we're talking about, more of a hard sell, if we're really being honest about this, in terms of fans. I mean, as much as I think we can take some degree of hope from protests that have, you know, literally been in all 50 states in this country. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like the coasts that have gotten involved with this, you're still talking about some regions that this is not going to be the easiest sale. It's going to be really interesting to see how this works, you know, both in this particular moment, but also in this particular moment when fan attendance in games may be somewhere between limited and non-existent.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think there's a moment where you do have a lot of eyes on you. And you know, we bring up Dwight Howard in that last segment, Andy, and it's like, you know, this what Dwight, in a way, is finding opportunities to talk about Breonna Taylor, right? And I think that's what a lot of, I don't think that was the right way to do it when he was being questioned about his mask and why he didn't wear it. Like, you have to take both things seriously. Like, just, you know, talking about a mask doesn't mean you're not talking about Breonna Taylor still, okay? But I think for baseball, like, this is a sport where, you know, what's the current percentage, Greg? I think it's 6% or 8% is African American.
Probably lower.
There's a lot of other. Yeah, it's pretty low. There's other black players in baseball, obviously, but they're not all Americans. Like, they could be from Venezuela or Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic, Cuba, but it's still a different, we haven't heard all that much from specific players on this. I've seen, what was that, like, maybe like a week or two ago, people were tipping their cap to the anniversary of the Negro Leagues.
But yes.
Been a little of that. I think Mike Trout put out some statements. Clayton Kershaw put out a few statements. I thought that was really big for those two players to do that because
it was.
They both known as not really ever taking much of a stance on anything. Clayton Kershaw does a lot of charity work. Obviously, he's really committed that way. But I haven't heard him take too many political stances. And for them to do it, you know, greatest hitter in the game, greatest player in the game, greatest pitcher in the game, probably. You know, that's a big statement that opens the door for everybody else to do it. But we just haven't seen a lot of baseball players getting involved. Just, well, and also, you know, too, whether it's they don't have voices, they're just not doing it.
It's also so helpful for, you know, the, like we were talking about, the scarce amount of black players, black American players, I should say, in Major League Baseball, to have white players speak out with them and in some ways open, you know, open the door for them to do it. Not that they need the permission from the white players or anything like that, but it's just, you don't want to leave black players out on an island. Like, you don't want to make them feel isolated for having done this and, you know, and make it feel like this is something that is their issue to take on, as opposed to something that all of us, to the degrees that we can and the degrees that you feel, I mean, you're going to have to experience some degree of discomfort. But when it comes to speaking out about something, I think comfort matters, because if you're uncomfortable speaking about an issue, it makes you a bad spokesperson. Like, no matter how much, no matter how much you actually care about it, you know, I mean, like, I think it's something that Colin Kaepernick actually, it's has made him, you know, a very, I think he's managed to make it work. But I think for a while, Colin Kaepernick struggled as the face of a movement because you heard so little from him. And I think in some ways it made it difficult to gauge exactly how he felt about certain things, because you didn't hear it from him. You always would hear things on his behalf. But when guys like Kershaw and Trout start speaking out, I think it opens up the floodgates for other players, but it also potentially opens up the floodgates for the league, because they can gauge the reaction on this.
Well, I mean, you know, over the past couple of months, we've seen some things that I never thought we would see in our lifetimes. I mean, for the state of Mississippi to change its flag from the Confederate flag, I thought that was a huge watershed moment. Like, that has been needing to change for a long time. And the fact that this just happened, it happened so quickly. It was just like, okay, finally, we're doing it. And it was like, wait, you've been fighting this so hard for 30 years. And in a couple of weeks, because of the attention and the collective zeitgeist changing so rapidly, boom, there goes the flag. NASCAR, there goes the flag. There, I mean, and I think that, you know, the question of right side of history, I always thought that would be a more compelling argument, that, like, people should just recognize they're on the wrong side of history. This is not going to age. Like, 30 years from now, you're going to look back and be embarrassed that you were making an argument for that Confederate flag to be hanging outside of the Ole Miss games, okay? That never worked on people. And
well,
now,
I mean, you're going to be,
all of a sudden, it did.
There's going to be a lot of people not just embarrassed by being on the wrong side of that argument, but that it took like a 20-something-year-old Mississippi State running back to not just drive home the fact that you're on the wrong side of it, but saying, I won't play. Like, I'm not going to step on that field if that flag doesn't change. Like, that your priorities on accepting this changing were influenced that much by the prospect of football being taken from you. Like, it really drives home where your priorities were in the first place. It's like it's like Daniel Snyder with the name change for Washington's football team. He's not going to get any credit for that taking place, because he doesn't deserve any credit for it, because he's made it incredibly clear he's only doing this because he has to. Like, the statements that that team have put out have only driven home just how much he is kicking and screaming about doing this. And by the way, too, given everything that's going on with that team now and the Washington Post investigation with 15 people, one on the record, talking about a culture of sexual harassment and, you know, general toxic culture that Daniel Snyder wasn't directly involved with when it came to sexual harassment. But in terms of you giving him the benefit of the doubt when it comes to how much he wants to, you know, sincerely change it, I have a hard time giving him that benefit of the doubt, because for years he was told this nickname hurts Native Americans. Mm-hmm. It hurts their spirit to have this. And his response was, I don't care, over my dead body, you changing that name. So why am I supposed to give him the benefit of the doubt that he actually cares about this and that his employee is being hurt?
Yeah. I think we're to that place now where, you know, he doesn't get any credit for changing the name now. Like,
no,
it's just like they had to do it and they did it, but you don't get any credit now for recognizing and finally waking up to this. But it is, this is our world now, right? Like this is, you know, where do we draw the lines on things? What's canceled? What's not canceled? What do we have an understanding on? What do we just, you know, how do we settle what's okay and what's not okay? In baseball, there's so much, I would say, I don't want to call it systemic racism, but there's so much of these right way to play the game, you know, all those debates that we were having all the time where, you know, players from Latin America or the Caribbean, they grow up where you hit a home run and you flip your bat and you celebrate and here that's seen as showing up the pitcher and not the right way to play the game, et cetera. Well, to me, it was always ridiculous because that's how they play the game growing up in the Caribbean. And so you're just telling them that the way that's not trying to show up a pitcher. That is just literally the way the game's played. And watching the Korean baseball league where that is the bat flip is like part of it.
Yes.
You know, now, okay, you're going to say the same thing to the Korean players, right? And I don't think that's, I don't think anybody's been calling that out. I want to go back and ask all those same players who had a major problem with Yasiel Puig and his, you know, rambunctiousness, right? Or whatever you want to call Puig being Puig.
Right, right.
All those same players that were, you know, tagging Puig for not, quote unquote, playing the game the right way, how they feel about the Korean players, right? Now that it's in the body of a different race or a different culture, how does that sit with you?
You perceive it differently. And you have to ask yourself, why am I perceiving this differently? Mm-hmm. Because like you said, there's an exuberance in Korean baseball that does not get criticized at all. But when the Latin players come over to America to play this game, there's, you know, it's not just an expectation of playing a certain way. It's considered frowned upon. There's like an arrogance there. You know, I think for some fans or frankly, some players, it's like a lack of gratitude that you're actually able to be a part of Major League Baseball when in reality you're able to do it because you earned it. You're good enough to be there. That's why you're there.
Yeah. So I feel like baseball as a culture has the farthest to go of pretty much any sport in terms of, you know, wrapping.
Four.
Yeah. Of the and baseball and the NFL. But the NFL at least, you know, I thought Roger Goodell making that video this year, turning around saying they had made a mistake in how they handled Kaepernick. That was huge. I'm still waiting for baseball to do anything like that.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, it's an interesting test case year for baseball just because they're going to be looking to wade into this without likely fans actually in the stadium. So it sort of gives you, I think, like a bit of a split the baby set up to try to do something like this. That, you know, baseball seems like they're going to dip their toes in this a little bit, see how they feel about it, how the players feel about it, how fans perceive it from TV and that viewing
Andy,
experience.
1,155 steps.
Yes. Yes. There you go.
We're still walking.
George
Sedano
will be
good show.
We'll be back tomorrow. Sedano Show, 710 ESPN.